So, I'm recording.
Oh,
Shall we do?
It's a dingle hopper.
Are you strange?
It means you're a baboon, and I'm not.
I'm talking about like a big bird.
Phenomenal cosmic power.
Hey,
that's cool. I really like that.
Thank you very much. We did that together.
We did well. I said, "Can you put that noise in there?" And you did all the actual difficult things.
We did it.
I just barked demands at you.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Or are
And
you meaning to people listening? Welcome to you
well,
too.
to everyone. To you. How's it going? What are we doing?
It's going all right. Today we're going to watch a movie film.
Exciting.
Which you know what it is now.
I
It's
do.
Princess and the Frog.
Princess and the Frog.
I'm really excited to watch this. This is my favorite of the revival era of the modern Disney
I
films.
already know we'll have a lot to talk about. Not spoilers, but your favorite voice actor.
Not only is my favorite voice actor in there, but there is a very interesting link, which I'll tell you about after
Oh,
we've
I love
watched,
interesting links.
to your favorite Disney character.
No way. What's
Yeah.
my favorite Disney
Actually,
character?
there's two.
Timon.
There's two. One that you might be able to figure out, and one that I'm sure you won't know. I did some deep
And now this
diving.
isn't like the whatever it's called, the five Kevin Bacons or whatever
No,
that
no,
name
no, no. It's
is. What's
very.
that called? It's not the five Kevin Bacons. That'd be a great film.
5 degrees of separation, that kind
That's
of thing.
it.
Yeah.
5 degrees of bacon, yeah. It's a thing, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
You're never 5 feet from a Kevin Bacon in a city.
No, there's two very direct things to do with Timon in this movie. One that if you can't think of right now, you will by the end time we've watched it,
Ooh,
you'll be
yeah.
like, oh yeah, that I think you'll pick it up. And the other one, like I say, I'm sure you won't know, but I think you'll find really interesting.
I'm already interested.
No.
Yes.
Many hours later.
That's for you in the edit. So, do you have any drinking rules?
I do have some drinking rules, Ross. And as usual, I will do all of the drinking rules, and you only have to do a few
Great.
because you don't like drinking rules.
I just like drinking.
So we've reached a compromise,
Yeah.
which means you have to do something you don't want to do a little bit. So we've got the standard Disney drinking rules, which we agreed on before, which are drink anytime a villain does an evil laugh, or anyone does an evil laugh, drink anytime a character is dancing. Drink any time a character starts singing. Drink any time there's a reference to dead or missing parents. And drink any time the sidekick shares some wisdom. So those are your standards, true for all the Disney films. So you have to pick. I will do all of them. I will drink through all of them.
It's
You
gonna
have to
be
pick one of them.
wasted.
Which one of them would you like? Evil laugh, dancing, singing, dead or missing parents, or sidekick
Do you know
wisdom?
what? I always love to you know me.
I do.
I always love to have a good old drink at an evil laugh.
Yeah,
So
it's a good thing to
today,
celebrate.
Matthew, I want to.
Do you want to give me your best evil laugh?
oh, shocking.
I feel like you're going to be a high-pitched one.
I don't know. Wow, there's so many.
That's really not evil. Oh, Inspector Gadget style.
Next time, Gadget. Next time.
Wow, I didn't know you could do
I can
that.
do that. That's probably my best, but I can't do Shakespeare with that,
Right.
basically. It's got like a 10 second.
Get you, Gadget.
Next
Next time, Gadget.
It's really
And
good.
after 10 seconds, it just stops
Yeah.
working.
I don't know what evil laughs. When I go to an evil laugh, I always go for like the haunted house demon kind of like. That one.
That's good. I thought you were just going to say the haunted house laugh, which would be like doors creaking and.
I always wanted to do like a, yeah, like a Jafar kind
That's good.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
The Wizard of Oz, which is the classic. Yeah, I mean.
So you're going to drink every time there's an evil laugh. I will do all of the other Disney standards. And another drinking rule that you have to pick is a name. So I picked three names for you to select, and you get to go first, for I am a gent. It is Tiana, Naveen, and Shadowman / Dr. Facili.
Now, I'm being clever here because I don't want to drink when the rules tell me to. I just want to drink when I want to drink.
Mm-hmm.
So, Naveen.
You think Naveen will get sent to
the suspect they don't actually... I mean, he probably keeps saying, no, my name's Naveen. And everyone's like, we'll call you Frog. We'll call you Princess.
Yeah.
Until the end of the film, I think, maybe.
I suspect you might be right. I suspect Naveen might be the one that said the least. Once he gets over saying, I'm Prince Naveen of Madonia. He's over that.
I'm going to be drinking a lot then.
Yeah, at the beginning, it will be heavy on you. The other ones that I will be doing specifically for Princess and the Frog are anytime someone says the word frog and anytime someone says the word restaurant. And
restaurant.
That's going to be tough. And the final rule is you can choose between drinking anytime the bayou is mentioned or anytime New Orleans or New Orleans is mentioned. So it's up to you, bayou or New Orleans, and I'll do the other one.
New Orleans. New Orleans.
You're going to do New Orleans, so anytime they say bayou, I will drink. Anytime they say New Orleans, Ross will drink. And what about my name? I didn't pick a name. Tiana or Shadowman, which one would you like me to do?
Oh, I get to choose. Yes. I'm just... her mum's in it, so I think there's going to be a lot of Tiana, mm-hmm. early on. But then later on, maybe not so much. Whereas the Shadowman, who says that to him? I'm the Shadowman. I don't know. So I think... Tiana. Let's go the main characters, you and I.
Okay.
You, Princess, I the Frog. Yeah. What have I done?
So, your three drinking rules, Ross, are anytime there is an evil laugh, anytime someone says Naveen, and anytime someone mentions New Orleans. And I will do
New Orleans.
All the other ones, including Bayou and Tiana. I think this is going to be quite a challenge for me. So we've got drinking rules. We know what film we're going to watch. The only thing to do before we jump right in is figure out what you already know about this film.
Yeah.
Because I'm the keeper of truth mm-hmm. in this movie film, which means I've done all the research. I hopefully know all the things.
We need to do a thing for the keeper of truth.
Like a crown.
Every time. Yeah. Some kind of keeper of truth and then your face or my face. Yeah.
Make like a theme tune.
Yeah.
So, yes, I am the keeper of truth. I hold all the information. I've done the research on this film. You have not. So, mm-hmm. off the top of your head, mm-hmm. what do you know about this film?
What's so, Tiana, young girl, she's got a little rich girl, posh friend.
Mm-hmm.
She meets a frog. I can't remember how they go on an adventure in the bayou. Mm-hmm. Can't remember why. they meet a crocodile who plays a trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
That's problematic as a herpetologist, but it's cool. There's a wee old lady, Mama Odie, who you can do an impression of, which we'll get to later.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, we've got that to look forward to. And then it all works out in the end when it all gets frozen. So I've got bits. I'll remember it. And then obviously a certain character.
What I was meaning was, do you know... any facts and trivia about
No, absolutely not. I know John Lasseter, this was his first, so he came over from Pixar to save Disney's American ass. So he came over from Pixar and did this is I think their first properly animated, that's a terrible thing to say,
hand drawn
animation in a while, and going back to the story, his first kind of storytelling. Obviously, we don't speak about John Lasseter anymore because of reasons.
John Lasseter did come back from Pixar, as you said, to help with this movie, and he recruited personally Ron Clements and John Musker because they'd quit. They'd actually quit Disney, and he wanted them to come back in for it.
See, a good choice. I mean, the man's got wandering hands and is a creepy bastard, but he can make an animated film.
Make a decision.
But that's not enough. He needs to be a good person.
And Clements and Musker obviously have done lots of other films,
mm-hmm.
which you will now list.
Yeah, so Aladdin,
mm-hmm.
The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
They did one that we really liked. Did they end up doing Treasure Planet?
They did end up doing that because that was what they wanted. Yeah.
We're going to get to that one soon.
And there was one more, I believe, that they did.
I'm going to kick my arrs. Did they do Basil the Great Mouse Detective?
I think there's two more. I think they did do Basil the Great Mouse Detective.
What's the last? I'm gonna.
They did. I think they might have also done Moana since then. I think
did they do Moana?
I think so.
Oh, good.
But they, in between some of the ones you mentioned, they did Hercules as well.
Ah. Man, Hercules. They're good.
Hercules.
They're good.
Yeah, done all right.
Yeah. I'd slip them a fiver.
Fairly successful. Okay, so, yeah, we've got the Drinking Rose, we've got the movie set up.
Mm-hmm.
We know what we're about to do. Let's go do it and come back and see what we thought of it.
Sweet.
Many hours later.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back. We've just watched Princess and the Frog. This is Ross and Miko. This is Ross.
Hello.
And I am Miko.
Hello.
And we are a little bit more intoxicated now than we were before, because the Drinking Rose worked quite well.
They applied. First and foremost. It was, how are you feeling?
Well, I had to drink a lot more than you.
You did, yes. And we all appreciate that.
Sacrificing.
But what do you think was a mistake? That should be the first question, I think.
I don't actually think this one went too far. Like
Tiana was a lot.
There was a lot more Tiana than I expected. I think, especially if you include Tia, which is what Charlotte calls her, which I did. I did include that. Then, yeah, it gets a bit much. There's a lot more remember your dead parents moments than I remembered as well. But it wasn't the worst we've done. Like, it wasn't like Lion King levels. Mine, when I made the Lion King roast.
And oh, that my was, goodness, yeah. That's what intense. Happens when you know a film too much.
Yeah.
But don't remember exactly how well you know it. And end up going, every time there's a floor.
Yeah, I was a bit ambitious with the Lion King roast. So I don't think it was that bad. I feel all right. I think I'm ready to go.
I've just realized I don't have my notes.
Oh no!
My one page of notes. I was
amateur.
I was enjoying it so much that I didn't. So entertain everyone, and then.
Da 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 da.
Almost there.
Now, bear 497, you're blind lady. You won't be human. You know what you want, but you're blind to what you need.
Please.
You missed my flawless impressions while you were away.
I heard them via my ears.
Now bear 497, you old blind lady.
Ah, I love it. But that raises a point.
Does it?
Where do we begin with this film? Where would you like to begin? There's so much stuff.
Honestly, I am... maybe because I love this film so much. I really went deep on this... I found a lot of really fascinating stuff, and it was honestly got to the point where I had to start editing down my interesting points. While we were watching, there was lots of things I told you that I wasn't planning on bringing up in the podcast because there was too much information, so I was just telling you as we went along.
So first off, for my own sake, the Timon references.
Right, you want to get them out of the way.
Yeah, just so that I can clear my brain of any wrongdoing.
So for anyone that doesn't know, Timon is Ross's favourite Disney character. And Timon is incredible from Lion King, obviously. There are two things that connect Timon to Princess and the Frog. The first is a reference. But what might have thrown you off is it's not a reference in this film to Lion King. It's a reference in Lion King to this film.
Even though
it was 15 years before or however long. Yeah, 15 years.
I don't even know how that works.
It obviously wasn't a deliberate reference to Princess and the Frog. It was just something that a very famous scene in Lion King is reflected in Princess and the Frog.
So, but surely that would be Princess and the Frog being inspired by...
Of course. Princess and the Frog is...
Sorry, like you're talking about time travel here, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
What I'm saying is it's not like at any point they have a meerkat or something. They're not referencing that film directly.
Do you know what?
This is confusing. I'll just tell you.
Well, no, because when you said, before we watched the film, you said... There was two references. One was obvious and you'd spot it, and one wasn't.
Yeah, one's a reference, one's not so much a reference.
When they pull back at the marriage scene in the bayou,
yes.
I was expecting
to see a
little Timon. Right. I was like, oh, and it didn't happen.
No. So the reference is much more subtle and very small and not as exciting as the second point, which I'm going to make, which I think you will love. So the first one is just simply Evangeline. So you'll remember...
Oh, the gas farting. A bunch of gas, who's this idiot?
Yeah. What,
that scene.
What do you think the stars are? And Timon says, they're fireflies. A bunch of fireflies that got stuck up on your big bluish black thing. And that's what we're...
I think they're balls of gas. Billions of miles away. I don't know why.
Pumba, everything's gas to you.
Why he sounds like an old Jewish guy.
Balls of gas, you got.
This is a Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I don't know. I used to do a good Pumba.
Yeah, Pumba's a hard voice. An underrated hard voice. Mm. The other one, let me see if I can find it so I get the actual name right. There we go. So one of the characters in Princess and the Frog.
Hold on. So Nathan Lane... is that I'm trying to figure out a thing. It's
none,
not that.
Nothing. None of them were voiced by Nathan Lane. One of them, the head animator for this character, was Mike Surrey, who was also the head animator for Timon. I thought you'd...
Which character?
You want to guess or you want me to tell you?
So I'll tell you my favoritely animated character, if that's a sentence we'll allow.
Yeah, I'll allow it. Nice. Favoritely.
We will allow this. Yeah. You need a gavel. my favorite animated character in this is Lottie Charlotte.
Oh yeah, she's incredible.
There's something they're doing new there, or old. Like it's old school, it's new school. It's really funny, but it's not her, obviously. So Lewis?
It's not Lewis. It's Ray. Raymond, the Firefly.
I should have said that.
There you go. The head animator on Ray was also the head animator for Timon in Lion King.
Give that person a raise.
Yeah, there you go. Mike Surrey. So he started off as an animating assistant with Disney, and Timon was his first character that he was the lead animator on.
That's cool.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
Because, as we said before this, Raymond, without necessarily saying it, Raymond is probably my second favourite character of all Disney time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. So it turns out you're a big Mike Surrey fan.
Yeah, I didn't even know his name.
There you go. Now
that's animation.
Yeah. I'm amazing character. And I guess that's a jumping off point to a very important thing that happens in this film, which is the death of Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to look into it just to make sure I was right. I don't know if I'd ever read this or I just felt like I knew it. Which was the notion that Ray was the first time we'd ever seen a villain directly kill a named character. And I would need to do some more research to find... I tried earlier today and I was struggling coming up against top 10 deaths in Disney kind of BuzzFeed kind of articles, which was frustrating. But obviously, like, one of the most famous deaths ever was Scar to Mufasa. But Scar doesn't directly kill Mufasa. He just throws him down and then the stampede kills him.
It's implied.
Yes,
it's implied.
And he causes the stampede and stuff. He is responsible, but he doesn't deliver the final blow.
Yeah.
And to my memory, which is often flawed, I can't think of another time where a villain directly... hit the final blow on a named good character.
I'll trust your memory more than mine, because as we know, I have none.
But if you have, you know, a contradiction,
I don't think so, but I would like to add to that like emotionally, it is on par with Mufasa.
I mean, I think a lot of people would disagree with that, but I agree. I'm in there. I was devastated by that.
Yeah, I mean, it's brutal, and it's...
It was the power dynamic. It was the fact that he literally squashes him like a bug. It was so devastating because it was so easy for him. It was so... And he just sort of raises his eyebrow and walks away. Like, it didn't matter to him. It was just a... There you go. And it meant so much more to us. And I think that was a really cool thing that you've not seen in a Disney film.
Yeah,
before.
And I feel like, because I wrote down one of the things here, was very early on, the theme is money. So I was trying to figure out how to say that, like poverty, money,
yeah,
power,
yeah,
those kind of things, because everyone's wanting power. Do you know, one of the interesting things, I keep saying that and everyone gets bored, but an interesting thing was at the beginning of this, we were like, Disney laughter, the villains, rearrange that into a sentence.
I get what you mean.
Yeah. He doesn't laugh at all in this.
No,
he just wants to get, because that's the difference between the seriousness is like, and a villain who already has everything they need and is just toying with folks.
Yeah,
and
trying to take over the world.
Yeah, whereas someone who's just been at the bottom the whole time, then it's like, it's not a joke.
Yeah, it was.
That's part of why that makes it.
And like you say, the power dynamic is all the way through it, including with Dr. Fasili, because he is beholden to his friends from the other side. Like, there's constantly, the only person we see that doesn't have anyone have power over them is Big Daddy, Charlotte's father, John Goodman. And I guess to a lesser extent, Charlotte, but, you know, she's very overwhelmed by this desperation to marry a prince and stuff like that, whereas Daddy LaBeouf doesn't, you know, seem to have anything that he wants or desires that he doesn't already have, anything that he needs. He's not responsible to anyone. But beyond, and he's really nice, which is a nice little thing. I like when movies subvert that. It would be so easy to make
him the villain.
Yes, yeah. It would be so easy to make the rich people that have everything they want the villain.
Yeah, and she's lovely as well. As soon as she realizes
this, I'm glad you brought this up. I want to know more about what you thought of the film first, but I left my notes for there as well. I should have. Okay. I went and got them when you got them.
I'll entertain
people. But one of the things I remember writing down was how much I love the relationship between Charlotte and Tiana, or Tia and Lottie as they call each other. It would be so easy for the writers to make Charlotte into this unlikable, you know, spoiled brat kind of character. And they don't shy away from that. You know, she gets everything that she ever wanted. But there's
a puppy.
Yeah. There's such a beautiful moment where everything's happening for her. They have the big party. The prince arrives. She's dancing with the prince. And Tiana has her restaurant taken away from her by the Fenner brothers. She tries to grab onto the tail. She falls backwards into the table, gets mess all over her dress. And Charlotte immediately stops what she's doing. Immediately. Rushes over. Even though this is the thing that she's been wanting since she was like 5 years old when we first meet them, she rushes over to her friend, helps her up and says, you know, Prince Naveen, I'll be back in a minute. I got to go take care of my girl. And that was so cool because they didn't need to do that. They didn't need to have that sisterhood there. They could have, like I say, it would be much easier, much lazier, but much easier to have Charlotte just be this self-obsessed princess, and the fact that they didn't go for that low-hanging fruit I thought was really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
What else did you have in terms of notes and things on the film? Because I'd like to, because obviously I've got lots of, as the keeper of truth.
I'm really excited about that though. Want to get to that.
Yeah, no, but I just want to know what your observations or questions or thoughts were.
This is kind of chronological, and then after, once I get totally into the film, it's just after thoughts. Mm-hmm. But so initially, and this actually comes back to what we're talking about the animation for Charlotte.
Okay.
Cute baby.
Yeah, they were very cute.
Both of them were so well animated.
Yeah.
Like from those beginning scenes, you're like, oh, these guys are great at what they do.
I had a small note about when they were kids and they were first doing the Princess and the Frog bit. Was the bit that I thought was really funny was when she puts the frog mask on the cat. It was just the fact that she had that ready, which means that she had that made.
Yeah.
She must have been like, Daddy, I need a frog mask for the cat so I can practice kissing a frog, because that's how dedicated to marrying a prince she was.
And that cat animation, that poor cat.
Oh, yeah. Clinging to him. Yeah, when he was crawling away at the end, I thought that was brilliant. All of the, as you've said though, all of Charlotte's animation was so, so funny. The bit where the prince finally arrives and she like does her makeup, puts the little beauty spot on, whistles, and then throws the glitter. Like, oh,
that was the thing. It was even when she was an adult, she was still animated in such a different style from everyone else. Like, I remember, I think I said to you that I was like, is she, are they doing her on different speed? Like, because you know, instead it's threes or twos or I can't remember. I don't know the technical terms, but she had a little. So while she was speaking to John Goodman, her dad, in the cafe, which is weirdly a scene I'll always remember about this film. I always remembered it the first time I seen the film, and I don't know why. I think it might be because it defines all the characters perfectly. And
well, it's the crossover, isn't it? It's having the king of the Mardi Gras, the one of the most powerful men in all of New Orleans, being in this rundown cafe because he loves Tiana, and because he loves the cooking that she does, and that's so
they're all friends. You're like, why don't you just throw her, give her money? But well, she wants to earn it, so it's rude to do that.
Yeah.
So it's like this weird kind of dynamic.
Well, first of all, they probably won't think to give her money because money isn't an issue when you're rich.
Unless so she asked, and then they totally would.
Oh, yeah, if she asked, she would have, but that wouldn't work with her character because that she's there to try and work hard for it. So no, I love that. There's actually a really cool point and bit of trivia based on that, which you might like to know.
No, I wouldn't. We're going to close the podcast now. Apparently, there's a fact happening, and we're just not interested.
Cool. Tiana initially wasn't going to be a waitress. She was going to be either a seamstress or a maid,
like her mum,
for the family. Yes, so her mum became the seamstress because they felt that there was too much negative implications with her being like a servant to the LaBeouf family. So they changed that so that it made their friendship much more real and poignant, and I think it works really well.
Do you think that would have made a difference?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay,
100%. Because the power dynamic of of being a,
I suppose if she's an indentured servant to
you're questioning the reasons behind everything. Is she just being nice to them because she's trying to keep her job and stuff like that? You know, like that changes a lot. What else you got?
So I noticed very early at the beginning there's a newspaper and it's essentially, I think it's Woodrow Wilson, I think, is the president.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it says Wilson elected.
Yeah, which I think is Woodrow Wilson. Is
yes,
that right?
I
don't know my...
1911, I believe, 1912.
But I think that was really interesting, and I wrote it down initially because I thought...
Well noticed, by the way. That's a really small detail. It's just in someone's newspaper.
Yeah, but I was like, why have they made a point of raising that, apart from if it isn't because of the Depression, black people in the community, everything else that we're about to see happen. So you have some historical knowledge, being the keeper of truths.
Keeper of truths. I mean, not too much. I know that it was set in 1926. The when they're younger, it's 1911.
Again, I would say that whole idea of theme. I think there's definitely a reason why they set it then and there, and it's not like it could be set at any time, and they made a point of doing it.
I think if you're going to have the first African American princess, I think making it clear that this was set in a time where her already gargantuan struggle would have been even more so, I think there's a powerful message to that. I that would be my guess as to why it was set in that year.
And controversially, music was better back then.
Oh, right, yeah, no, you're getting right into the jazz. Yeah.
Friends on the Other Side. So,
I ruined that for you by singing the entire thing instead of letting you listen.
You were singing it, but then I tried to ruin it for you because, and then we spoke about this. You guys weren't there, but you are now. It's half Never Had a Friend Like You. And it's half Oogie Boogie. And you were saying that there was people were trying to put another reference to Nightmare Before Christmas in there, but you're not sure.
I don't think that was real. So I saw online that a lot of people were talking about there was Jack Skellington makes a cameo in Princess and the Frog. I don't think that's right. So when all of the shadow monsters first appear on the walls, when he's first asking for their help, one of them has got, like, you know, a bald head, basically, and big oval eyes. They do look a bit like Jack Skellington, but I think if they were going to do that, they would have had him have spiky shoulders or you know, something else to hint towards the character, and they didn't. So I don't think it was. I think it was just...
I would have had him striped, like a shadow striped.
Yeah,
like a Tim Burton...
Just something, even if it was something subtle. But I think that was too subtle. I think it was just that shadow has big eyes, therefore it's... Just, yeah, I think that's a bit of a reach, to be honest. I don't think that... There's loads of actual deliberate references in there, which are undeniable. So that's what makes me doubt that that was a reference. I'm much more likely just an accident.
Are you about to hit us up with those?
You want some facts?
Put it in the camera.
You want some facts? This was sorry, am I out of the camera? I can't see where the camera is.
It's this one here.
No, I know. Okay, look, let me rephrase.
Look.
I know where the camera is. I don't know if I'm in frame. Oh, that's another thing. Yeah, because we're on two separate cameras, yeah, so we should probably reach
out
we're
in the same
to
place.
Prove that we're together.
Anyway, so do some facts.
All right, what kind of facts do you want? Let's start with some simple observation facts.
Observation.
So I pointed this out to you because you didn't notice it at first, which is where the A113 appears.
Yes, I keep forgetting that's a thing.
Yep, little Disney nerd thing. If you don't know, the code A113 appears in almost every Disney and Pixar movie over the last, 25 years. certain amount of time. Because a lot of animators studied their craft in a room that was called A113. And so it's featured in every Pixar movie and in a lot of Disney movies since then as well. And it's in Princess and the Frog. It's the title of the tram? It's the tram number is A113. Dr. Facili.
Mm-hmm. I know him. My friend.
I think he might not like the nickname Shadow Man.
Oh.
Because everyone in the film calls him Shadow Man. No one calls him Dr. Facili at any point. The only time we hear that name is when he calls himself. So he never calls himself Shadow Man. And everyone else does.
That makes a lot of sense because you would... You go, like, I'm a doctor.
Yeah, like, yeah. It seems like he's bringing in his credentials.
Voodoo guy, no.
Yeah,
yeah.
So he was just called Shadow Man by everyone else, but he called himself Dr. Facili.
Although we don't know if he is a genuine doctor, he's probably not.
Why probably, Ross? Huh?
Because of his hat. He's got great.
Because of his hat.
He's got great hair.
He does.
He hides it under that big hat.
Yeah.
That's something I'll never understand.
As a fellow fluffy man,
yeah.
Cut his hair, I'm very jealous.
I'll understand his villainy a lot easier than I'll understand his hiding his hair.
Yeah. Some more quick fire facts. Yeah. I'll turn these into questions for you, little quizzes. This was the first musical, hand drawn animated musical.
Agreed.
That Disney had done since.
Uh oh. First hand-drawn musical,
mm-hmm.
Disney,
mm-hmm.
since, and then there's been a lot of...
Now, I'm including movies that have some, you know, computer technology in there as well, as opposed to cell painting and all that stuff. Because then you're going back into the 80s and things like that.
So Winnie the Pooh was before this...
Winnie the Pooh was after this.
After this.
The new Winnie the Pooh was 2011,
No way was it Beauty and the Beast.
No, it wasn't. There's been hand-drawn musicals since Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and
the Beast was 91.
Because we had Atlantis, and then we had...
Atlantis wasn't a musical, though.
So I don't know. Was it a shitty one?
I'll tell you what, it wasn't in the second Silver Age or the post-Renaissance Age or whatever you want to call it. It wasn't in the 2000s.
It wasn't in time.
So it was back in the 20th century.
Right.
I'll give you the year if that helps. I know years better than you do in terms of Disney movies.
How many Mikos was that?
It was 1998. So anyone listening might be able to figure out that. 1998 was the last hand-drawn musical before that.
No way.
And the only one, those are the most recent two, because there hasn't been another one since then. It's all been CGI stuff.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Disney.
I know.
Come on.
22 years, we've only had two hand-drawn musicals from Disney. Any guesses as to what was released in
1998? Hold on, we're talking about...
It's the end of the Renaissance.
But that's Beauty and the Beast territory, isn't it?
No, that Beauty and the Beast was 91. But yes, it's the same era, but Beauty and the Beast was very early in it.
Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
Aladdin wasn't 1998. That was like 95 or something, wasn't it?
93, I think.
93. Came after. Oh, Hercules?
Hercules did come after that. It wasn't Hercules, I believe, is 97.
I love the way you're just giving me that. Yeah, you're right.
It did come after that. You're right. You are.
Hercules, and then Hunchback.
Hunchback, yeah, was about 96, 97, about that time as well.
Go on, it looks like you're dying.
No, I'm enjoying you trying to figure it out.
This is dull for you're everyone. Right. So. What was it?
The last hand-drawn musical before Princess and the Frog was Mulan in 1998.
Which is just coming out.
The live-action remake is coming out. Some people would argue that Tarzan, which was in 99, was a musical, but...
He didn't sing any of them.
Yeah, there wasn't more than three character-sung songs, which is how the animation world has decided to define...
Let's ignore people's definitions.
Yeah, okay,
of things.
Right, there you go. Okay.
But Tarzan's music was kind of rubbish.
Wow. Phil Collins on blast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so other general facts about Princess and the Frog. It was released in 2009. It took 3.5 years to make.
Mm-hmm.
I told Standard. You. Yeah. What happens in this movie more than any other Disney animated classic?
Frogs.
Potentially. There's at least two.
Potential frogs.
At most two. I think there's probably more frogs in some other films.
But they keep happening.
There's more frogs in Little Mermaid than there is in Princess and the Frog.
Really?
Well, there's the bit in the Kiss the Girl. They've got a whole bunch of frogs there. There's like four or five of them sitting on a lily pad.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not... Anyway, it's not frogs. Either way.
What happens? Kissing.
Act. Yes.
Kissing. There's a lot of kissing.
Yes.
And I was going to say this, but I didn't. And then I was going to write it down, but I didn't because I'm good at what I do.
All of that's irrelevant. You're here now.
But at the start, when he's a frog and he's lying and it's all about power and getting money.
I'll give you anything you want.
Giant lips.
Yeah, big puckering.
At the end, when he's going and doing the kiss, he's
and he doesn't really want to kiss Charlotte.
Tiny little lips.
It's a very good observation. There's Tiana and Naveen kiss 5 times, which is much more than any other couple in Disney
history. It is Lucas!
So, this is Walt Disney Animation Studios' first musical film in which all of the voice actors do both the speaking and the singing parts.
Oh.
Since another film in the Renaissance era.
In the Renaissance.
Era?
Okay, so I know...
What was the last film where the actors did both the singing and the speaking parts?
Now I know the...
rough era. Yeah.
Lion King, there was a young boy who did the singing, so that doesn't count. I think the lady that did Ariel did the singing, I think. But I don't know about everyone else. It better not be Basil the Great Mouse Detective.
No, it's more recent than that.
Okay.
And that was 86.
I don't know. I actually genuinely don't know.
So the last film before this to have all of the voice actors do the singing and speaking parts be the same people was 1991. Do you know what film came out that year?
1991.
I have already told you.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast was the last film in which the same actors did the speaking and the singing parts. Until this. And of course, in this one, It was Anika Connie Rose, who I've already told you I love, but she's not super well known. She was in Dreamgirls. Slight tangent fact, all of the main cast of Dreamgirls were considered for the role of Tiana.
Really?
So they considered Jennifer Hudson, who you know I love.
Yes.
But she had her family tragedy, where some of her family were shot and killed, happened in 2008, the year before this. So she wasn't up for it. They considered Beyoncé, but Beyoncé just flat out refused to audition because she's Beyoncé. Fair play.
She's queen of a country.
Yeah, but
better things to do.
But fair play to Disney as well for saying, well, if you're not auditioning, you're not getting it. And so it went to Anika Connie Rose, who is the third member of the Dreamgirls, basically the overlooked
she's
one.
She's brilliant.
She's incredible. She's so good for the role. Yeah. But do you know the most high-profile person that really wanted to play her? There was a bunch, but there was one who famously called Walt Disney Studios, essentially pleading to be this role.
Donald Trump.
It wasn't Donald Trump.
Weird.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I wouldn't be able to guess.
A very famous black pop artist, Alicia Keys.
Oh, yeah. I do like Alicia Keys.
She's phenomenal, and she really wanted to play the part, but it ended up going to Anika Connie Rose.
Which was probably the right thing. I mean, as much as I love Alicia Keys, but I mean, that film worked.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no. No, it was amazing. All right, some more. How about a little more testing your knowledge?
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Okay, so it was the first Disney film to have more than one song be animated for the Best Original Song at the Academy Awards. First of all, do you have any guesses as to what the two songs were? Secondly, what was the previous film had more than one song be nominated for Best Original Song?
Almost There.
Mm-hmm. That was definitely one of them. I think it won it.
Now, is it Dr. John's beginning song?
It is.
There you go.
Down in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
By Randy Newman. He wrote it. But
I'd love to see those two on a piano together.
So Dr. John does the...
And the other one goes... Yeah.
So Dr. John does the intro version and Anika Connie Rose does the outro version, but you can also find the Randy Newman version on the soundtrack. So that and Almost There were both nominated. I believe Almost There won it, but I should probably check that out.
I got it.
So what was the last film to have more than one song nominated for Best Original Song at the Oscars?
Last Disney animated
last song? Last Disney animated film to have more than one song. Just go with your heart. I think you'll get it right.
The Lion King.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly, there you go. Lion King, 1994, had...
Kenya...
Habidissimo. I didn't actually look into that, so this is off the top of my head, and I don't really know, but I guess it was Circle of Life and Can You Feel the Love Tonight? But I can't guarantee that, but I'm assuming those were the two songs that got that from that film. Upon receiving 3 Academy Award nominations...
Me? Really?
The Princess and the Frog became the first Disney animated feature film to receive more Academy Award nominations than just one since... So you already know that Lion King got at least 2.
Yeah.
Has there been another film since then that got more than one?
Okay, so... probably...
And there's only been one. There's only been... one film between Lion King and this film that received more than one Oscar nomination.
Shrek.
That's not a Disney film. How dare you get out right now? What are you doing? Why would you even say that?
Welcome to my hate. Nah, then it must be Lion King.
So it was actually the film that was released just after Lion King.
Oh, crap.
This is so funny because you know way more than I do about animation and the ins and outs.
Lion King was the B movie.
But your memory of what year things came out is terrible.
Lion King was the B movie. The A movie of that year was equally as good, but just didn't win any awards. And I can't remember what it is at the moment.
Pocahontas. Pocahontas
Bollocks.
Received 2 Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
So that was the last film to do that.
Crap.
So there you go. Those are some general ones. Beyond that, I've got a list of Disney references. and I've got a list of deep dive facts, and I've got some character facts. So
you have so much.
I have a lot.
Exciting things.
Yeah. So it's whenever you're ready, if you've got more that you want to talk about or questions that you want to ask me, I can do it more organically rather than me just reading off facts, because that's a little boring.
I don't know. I think it just got to pretty much the end of this. All I was thinking about, I really loved, although I mentioned this before, that the whole concept of the crocodile boy wanting to be a real human, very Pocahontas. I want to say Pikachino.
Very Pikachino. Super Pikachino.
Most Pika. Whenever the Pikachino lies, part of his body grows. Then I was thinking, when they were making their restaurant at the end, all I could think of was Gordon Ramsay coming in after 2 years and telling them everything they've done wrong. So yeah, that's all my notes.
It's burnt. It's raw.
What's wrong with this walking?
This gumbo is raw.
Ah, the gumbo. That should be
a drinking rule. It's a nice gentle drinking rule. It comes in about 5 times,
but it always feels
important. You always notice it.
Because I feel like that's the thing about the culture and it's exactly
what they say. Good food brings people together, and it's very much a thread through the entire movie. So you said something interesting there.
What?
Yeah, I know. Which was
memorize this moment.
The notion of Lewis wanting to be a real human.
Yes, Pinocchio.
Here's an interesting fact for you. Lewis initially was going to start the film as a human.
Ah.
And he had no musical talent, but he wanted to. So he visited the Shadow Man, who gave him musical powers but turned him into an alligator.
That's really interesting.
Right.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yes. They basically went, it was going to take too much time and it was going to be too distracting as a subplot, so they ended up bypassing it. But when you consider that, it makes a lot of things make more sense.
It makes a lot of things make more sense, but also glad they didn't do that because, to make Raymond more believable, we need to be introduced to other creatures who are have personalities.
Yes, yeah.
So if we find all... He used to be a human. He used to be a. She used to be human. Everything else
doesn't
matter.
It makes Ray seem weirder. Yeah.
Yeah. So it kind of works.
I completely agree.
That's great. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you. So, do you want a deep dive or do you want a character fact?
When you say character fact, what do you mean?
I mean a fact about a character.
Ah. Deep dive.
All right. Okay. Let's see. Okay, so the first one I've got here is one that I told you while it was happening, which is that Clements and Musker do feature in the film. They are featured throwing out beads from the King Triton float during the parade towards the end. What I didn't tell you is that just behind them is another very human-looking character, and that is an animated version of Rob Edwards. Of Bruce W. Smith, who was the lead animator for Dr. Facilier.
Oh.
So he's on there throwing beads out with them as well. The reason I said Rob Edwards is because I've got a fact about him. He was the screenwriter and he was the tram driver.
Oh, right, cool.
On the A113, just a very little quick cameo, which is very nice. And there's loads of stuff like that in this film.
I think that reminds me, and I probably say this now at every juncture but I'm always reminded of Peter Pan, the Disney classic, and how all the animators wanted to animate Hook.
Yeah.
None of them wanted to animate Peter Pan.
And Dr. Facilier was incredibly well
exactly and so and yeah, him yeah. and Charlotte I think was total yeah. like I don't know how that happened but and I don't know how early on someone went, you know what, I'll take her, because she was fucking brilliant. Was brilliant. There's the crocodile with
Lewis
was great. There was and obviously everything was great, but there was like a few key ones that I'd imagine people were like clawing for.
Yeah, I mean, even watching some of the deleted scenes where they were doing the unofficial storyboard art, you could see the design differences over time. And there's so many different... Take Lewis, for example. There's so many different ways that you can try and create a Baloo-type character out of an alligator. And I think what they went with was perfect. Same with Raymond. They had we've seen lots of initial art done, a lot of scratch art done on what the character of Raymond should look like. And I think that the one they went with was incredible. Mm. And that's all down to your guy, Mike Surrey, I think was his name.
My guy. What's
your guy?
The guy
who designed Timon. Also
designed me as a
Ray.
Human being.
Mm.
He created
shaped
me.
Shaped you.
Yeah.
There's another great Lewis... moment, a little reference that you want to. So there was one in the film which I pointed out to you and asked if you could figure out, and you couldn't, but as soon as I said it, you got it. Which is when he's talking about Mama Odie and describing the mad witch lady that lives in the bayou, and he grabs some of the swamp grass, whatever it is, and pulls it down by his head, so he's got like little grey pigtails. And he looks exactly like Mad Madam Mim from Sword in the Stone. It's been a long time since I've seen Sword in the Stone, so again, I might be wrong. My brain might just be filling in the gaps, but I think that was a very deliberate reference. And the other thing he does is during When I'm Human, as I hope to be.
Oh, we've not even begun to talk about him yet.
Oh, we've not got into the music, and there's a bit where he says, you've heard of Louis Armstrong, Mr. Cindy Boucher. When he says you've heard of Louis Armstrong, he grabs a bit of that same swamp tree grass, whatever it's called. I should really have found out the name of the plant. But he grabs that from there and wipes the left side of his mouth, which is something that Louis Armstrong used to do all the time. He'd basically broken his mouth from playing the trumpet too hard for so many years. And so he always kept a handkerchief in his pocket to wipe the saliva, basically, from the left side of his mouth while he was playing. And so that was a very direct and on-the-nose Louis Armstrong reference.
Well, also those
really
deleted
cool
scenes that we watched, I think most of them had references to Satchmo. Which they kind of took out, and
they took out a lot of them.
But you can still feel it in the film.
He
mentions him like once, I think. That time. But yeah, obviously, a trumpeter in the or whatever you want to call it. So that sounds the way I say trumpeter makes it sound like an insult.
Yeah, trumpeter. Yeah, mad trumpeter. character or deep dive?
Yeah, one of them.
Which one?
Character. We didn't do a character one last one.
All right. Here's one I really liked, actually, which I didn't know. Anika Connie Rose, who played Tiana, requested that Tiana be left-handed because she is. And the animators agreed. And so Tiana is one of only two left-handed princesses.
Don't ask me who the other one is.
You want me just to tell you?
Well, hold on.
Don't ask me, but also don't tell me.
So who's the other one? But also, hold. Why was the other one? Was it the same reason?
I don't know. I'm sorry to let you down. We haven't watched the other film together. I haven't looked into it, and so I don't know what the reasons were for the other one being left-handed. But the other one was Mulan. And Mulan, draws art on her arm with her left hand and stuff. She's left-handed as well. So it's just Mulan and Tiana. So let's give you some Disney references that were there. I told you about Aladdin's magic carpet. That's the first Disney reference in that film. In the opening sequence, when they're zooming in on New Orleans, someone is hanging out a rug to dry, and it is the magic carpet from Aladdin. There's the King Triton float, which
we
talked
Triton
about.
Triton, and behind that, there was kind of a little bit of...
You noticed the Jafar float. Yeah, well done, Nat.
Thank you very much.
There's apparently also a Treasure Planet float, although I did also read that someone said there was a Hercules float. But when I watched it, I didn't notice specifically either of those being overly obvious. So. When Mama Odie is looking for something and she's throwing stuff and we see Juju... And we see all the stuff flying by him before the clam gets caught in his mouth. Aladdin's magic lamp flies by him, which appears in a bunch of films, which is really cool. I like the...
Do you have to pause it to see it? Sorry, hold on.
No, you'll notice it flying by him if you're paying attention.
Can't believe I don't own one. I know there's like a magic eight ball. There used to be one of the original toys.
Oh, like a lot.
Was, yeah, and then you lifted the little thing and it would be like, nope.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, here's a good one. That you definitely won. It was very, very subtle. But in Charlotte's house, when we see Tiana kissing Naveen, there's books on the bookshelf, and two of them are Rapunzel, a nod to the next Disney film, Tangled, and Little Mermaid, obviously a nod to one of the earlier films that Musker and Clements did together. But there's another future film that was referenced in this movie, which is Merida from Brave.
No.
Yes, there's a little Merida toy in Charlotte's room as well, which is a nod to Brave, which would be 2012, which was 3 years away from being released. But that was pretty cool. Oh, my final Disney reference that I noticed that I thought was fun was one of the hunters gets his trousers blown by a shotgun,
mm-hmm.
and it reveals his underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And his underwear is white with little red love hearts on it, and it's the same underwear that Prince Ahmed has in Aladdin when Raja bites his bum.
Oh, yeah.
And reveals it's nice. The same. It's the same pants.
Yeah.
So that's obviously the underwear of choice for the unthreatening secondary or tertiary villain in a Disney film.
Nice.
That's the pants of choice. I thought that was really cool.
I was thinking about those guys because they're really interesting, and they're only in it for a very short period of time. But to the point where you forgot that one of them only had two fingers.
And his name's Two Fingers, so I really should have remembered
his
that.
His name is Two Fingers. And you were saying that they might have... There might be a thing with them?
Some people were saying it's Curly Larry Moe. Some people were...
Well, like, there's three arseholes.
Yeah, yeah. People were claiming lots of things online that I saw. Like I say, while researching this, if you do a deep dive on any Disney movie, you'll find a lot of people making claims that aren't actually true, that they haven't done any research themselves. They've just said a thing. A very good example was in this, a fact that I saw over and over again was that Naveen doesn't refer to Tiana as Tiana until the scene where they're dancing together and they start falling in love. But that's not true. He introduces Tiana to Lewis a good, you know, 15-20 minutes before that. Says, this is Tiana, the waitress. But yeah, so there's a lot of facts like that. Any other things that you want to say, or do you want more facts?
No, I just want to say, I reckon, you know, I don't like doing top tens, top fives,
yes,
that kind of shit. But I know for a fact, if a gun was pointed to my head,
mm-hmm.
Lion King would be there, Aladdin would be there,
mm-hmm.
Little Mermaid would be there,
mm-hmm.
and this film would be there.
Wow. Okay. That's huge. Especially unprompted.
I don't know in what order, and I'd rather not.
Wow.
And sometimes I might not want to watch them, but
that's huge though, because anyone that's listening that doesn't know you so well, that's not just a silly joke that you don't like ranking things. You really don't, and that was unprompted. I didn't bully you into that, and I would, and I have done in the past.
You're a bully.
But you, wow,
so I absolutely love this film so much.
And obviously, I know you like all Disney films and stuff, mm-hmm. but I wasn't expecting that from you. I wasn't, because as you know, this is my favorite of the modern Disney films. This is my favorite of, it's the film that kickstarted the revival era. It's the film that got me back into Disney. Not that I ever didn't like the old ones, but I'd kind of, during the 2000s, which everyone agrees was a bit of a lull, there's a lot of films there that I missed. And when they announced they were doing a hand-drawn one again, I got really excited. I went to see it at the cinema. I was blown away by it.
Did you go and see Winnie the Pooh, though?
I did, yeah. And Winnie the Pooh was excellent.
It was good. The little piglet cutting all of the...
Yeah. Everything in that, this era, has been great. You know, the next film was Tangled, I believe, and then Winnie the Pooh, and, you know, you've got Big Hero 6 and Moana and Frozen 2. Like, these are great films. And Princess and the Frog was the one that started it all, the one that started this revival era of Disney actually making money again and making great films that people wanted to see. So it's great for me as a massive fan of this film. It's great for me to hear that you not only enjoyed it, but hold it in such high regard as to put it in the same sentence as films like Aladdin and Lion King, which for anyone is high praise, but particularly for you, I know those are some of your favourites.
It's difficult being me.
And I completely agree. Like I say, Princess and the Frog is in my top three Disney films ever. And so it's very nice to hear you put it in a similar standing, because I wasn't expecting that.
I love it.
Do you have any questions? Because I've still got a bunch of facts.
Go with the facts. I've got no more questions. But I just love the film. I love. I want to know more about the actress, but I don't think we've got any more about that. So I'll go on IMDb.
Anika Connie-Rose.
Yeah,
she's not been in much that you would know. But if you want to talk voice actors, so Anika Connie-Rose, I know you love voice acting.
We've not even done this yet. We've not
talked about the voice actors. So other than Dreamgirls, Anika Connie-Rose hasn't been in a lot that you definitely know. The woman who played Mama Odie, who's hands down my favourite voice in the film, was voiced by the black mother of Hollywood, Jennifer Lawrence. Not Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence!
She's outstayed her welcome there.
She's
not allowed. She's not allowed that. I love her. I love her, but she's not allowed to be
that. That's hilarious.
That.
Jennifer Lewis. So, Mama Odie. Was voiced by Jennifer Lewis, the black mother of Hollywood, who's a legend, and it's my favourite voice in the entire film. I think it's amazing, and as you know, I try to do it all the time. It's a very difficult voice to do. I did it earlier when you were away at the thing, but I wasn't here,
so you're going to cut that out, but here we are.
Not bad for a 197-year-old blind
lady. Do you get physical with your impressions?
Oh yeah, you got it with a voice like that. It depends how hard the voice is.
I love that her tongue was like always out.
Yeah.
It's so good.
So why don't you try and do a Mama Odie first?
I can't remember what she sounds like.
I can't remember what
she looks like.
Two easy lines. Not bad for a 197-year-old blind lady. And you want some candy? Too bad. It's a special candy. Would it turn you all human?
You want some candy? Not to pay for the button fire.
Wow, that was really good.
Thank you. That's why I don't do that unscripted.
Wow.
But
I'll try that same one.
What went wrong?
Everything. That was really bad.
Thanks.
If you make one wrong sound in an impression, you give up and commit to the failure.
Burn everything. I'm an arsonist.
Too bad. It's a special candy. Would you turn y'all human? You want some candy? But you just doing this voice.
Try and say,
not bad for a 197-year-old blind lady.
Not bad for a 107-year-old blind lady.
You nailed it.
Okay.
You nailed it. It's perfect. You're much better at voices than me in general, though. And my Mama Odie is still terrible.
I need to hear them. Like, my memory is terrible. Yeah. So, like, I'm sure over years of listening to you doing that, I'll gain the power.
Yeah, you're more naturally talented at doing voices than I am.
But no, it takes years. What next?
I'll give you a character fact before we get into some of the deep dive stuff that I think you'll find interesting, but is, you know, it's a bit more nerdy. So Mama Odie, voiced by Jennifer Lewis, but she was based on a woman called Colleen Salley, who's a Cajun storyteller who died just before the film was released. So she never got to see it in its entirety. But,
No.
Yeah, but the design and the voice and stuff was based on Colleen Salley, which I had a hard time sort of finding her online and stuff. She was very much a local legend as opposed to a global icon. But she'd done a lot of children's books and stuff that were very popular. So some deep dive facts that I found out at the end when they're realizing it's midnight and it's too late for Lottie to kiss the frog. The four, you might have noticed that the clock was all in Roman numerals that was behind them. But the four was not an IV, which is the traditional Roman numeral for four, mm-hmm. but it was actually four eyes.
Mm.
This wasn't actually a mistake. This is based on a famous New Orleans clock, apparently, in which it has four eyes as the four. Who knows why that was originally done, but that's why it's done in the film.
Well, because Greeks are idiots.
Ah, oh, that'll be why. That's
I think so.
Should have went to GreeksAreFools.com and read their reference on it.
Yeah.
So at the end of the film, when they're in Tiana's place, which she now has, and it's amazing, there's a band playing with Lewis and Naveen, and they are called the Firehouse Five plus Lou, which is a reference to a real band called the Firehouse Five plus Two. Have you heard of them?
No.
That band featured two of the nine old men, Frank Thomas and Ward Kimball.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this fact.
Yeah. And so that was a deliberate reference to their band and the animated Frank Thomas playing the piano. So the guy playing the piano is Frank Thomas.
If I don't ruin this moment, we need to mention to people nine old men who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what, no, we don't have to name them all, but
they're two of the nine old men who are the original icons of animation. In the Disney family.
Yeah,
and basically trained up every notable animator. Ever since then, it's a long lineage of respect and incredible talent, and yeah, so that's why that's there.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
Some animal facts for you.
Come on now.
I know you love animal facts.
Disney facts and then animal facts.
I know. I'm trying to please you. So there are 2,000 species of firefly. Probably not exactly. Probably
only one Raymond.
Only one room on, and many of them don't light up, and in many of the species, only the females light up, and they do that either as a beacon because they want to mate, or as a trap to then eat the males. So they've got a bit of that black widow thing going on. So,
I thought you were going to ask me questions. That's why I was like. But yeah, that's
what questions would I ask you?
Is that a good thing?
Can you name some of those species?
Yeah. Oh god, that's cool. That's horrible and cool. Flies are a strange creature. We need to associate ourselves more with flies.
I love that when we started this, I was way more drunk than you. But since then, I feel like when we're watching the film, you're like, I will drink conservatively I don't want to get too drunk for the recording. But once we started recording, you were like, well, we're here now. So let's just get in.
Many hours later.
Fact 73. So here is, I believe, my final fact. This was interesting. This led me down the rabbit hole of voodoo and things like that. So Dr. Facili is based on one of the voodoo Loas, the god of death or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But Prince Naveen, when he turns over the tarot cards during the song Friends on the Other Side, many of them are actual real tarot cards. So the first one he turns over is the Three of Pentacles.
But then it goes all really long.
Yeah, yeah. They transform it for the story.
Yeah.
But that's the card symbolizing constructive energy, particularly with money. And Lawrence's first card is the Ten of Wands, which is the card of oppression, which is the you've been pushed around all your life stuff. Your mother, your sister, your brother. And if you was married, you'd be pushed around by your wife. When the prince's second card is spun, it shows the prince in front of a tower with no money, with his pockets outturned. And the Roman numeral X5I, or XVI, sorry, so 16, is shown at the top, denoting it to be the tower, which is a card in tarot that represents uncontrolled change and loss. And the final card the prince is shown resembles the card zero, a.k.a. the Fool, which is when he's been convinced to sign over his humanity in order to have some wealth.
Fool.
Yeah, Fool. Pretty cool,
fool.
Right?
Fool!
Another little thing that I noticed just when we were watching it is that the Mama Odie Dr. Facili contrast, which I hadn't really noticed before while watching it, but it's pretty cool because her entire message is dig a little deeper and you'll find that what you need is already inside of you. What you want is something entirely different. And I can help you get what you want, but it's not what you need. And if you go for what you want without realizing what you need and the fact that you already have it, then what you want is hollow. And I think that's an incredibly powerful message in terms of contentment and happiness and acceptance. And it's the reason that a lot of people feel so frustrated and stuff in life is because we're always focusing on what we don't have instead of digging a little deeper and realizing that the things that are really important, we do already have. They are already within us. As opposed to Dr. Facili, where, you know, the echo line in his song is you got what you wanted, but you lost what you had. Mm. And that's also in Down in New Orleans.
He's got a big fancy hat.
He does have a big fancy hat.
Which suggests he had stuff. I'm making sense.
You're on a different level from me.
He's
man.
Wearing purple. He's wearing a big hat.
Many hours later.
In conclusion, have we done it? Have we ended this? Have we ended this yet?
Again.
So we should wrap this up. We've done lots of facts. We've done lots of opinions and thoughts. I'm really glad you loved it. And I'm really glad I got to watch it again. Any excuse is a good excuse. And I'm glad I got to learn all this interesting stuff about it that I didn't know before. There's so many references, so much more than we included in this because I had to cut it off at some point because it was just getting ridiculous.
So we're going to end this. I'm going to be the keeper of truth next time.
You are. Do you know what film you're going to do?
I do.
Oh, wow. Are you going to reveal it?
Well, it's up to you.
Yeah, no, I want to know. Yeah.
So the next film we're going to watch is Dinosaur.
Dinosaur.
I think that's what it's called.
Dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs.
2000, 2001, that kind of era?
It's generally, people...
Had the big eye as the poster.
Yeah, people forget it.
Well, I've never seen it.
No, nobody remembers it.
I've never seen. We're getting into that era that I've not seen most of those Disney films.
So I'll be your guide.
You're going to be the keeper of truth.
I'll be the keeper of truth. I will try and figure out how this film was made, why it was made, why it was forgotten, why I owned it on VHS cassette, never watched it again, what's gone wrong with it, all that stuff.
Are we going to watch it on VHS?
I don't know. I think I destroyed it.
Oh, right, okay.
So, tune in next time for Dinosaur, the possibly most forgettable thing. Like, I think nobody will remember it ever.
I think that's a good point. People don't talk. I've never had anyone be like, "What's your favorite Disney movie?" About Dinosaur.
Dinosaur. Yeah,
it's never happened. Cool. So, I'm very intrigued. I loved Land Before Time, which is a Don Bluth Disney film.
Oh yeah, but that's
so. I think that might be the stumbling block it's going to fall into is Land Before Time and Jurassic Park. Like, if you make a dinosaur movie, there's some classics out there that you've got to compete with. So I'm intrigued. I know nothing about the film other than it has dinosaurs.
I don't know either, but I will learn.
So I'm looking forward to your facts and your information. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to watching it and see what happens. I'm looking forward to trying to make up drinking rules to it. And we'll do that one next time. But this has been Princess and the Frog.
Sorry, I went while you were saying that.
Why?
Try again.
Do you want to do an outro then?
No, you do it. You were doing great.
I don't trust me to
and
do
I
it.
I ruined you.
Exactly. And you're going to do it again. So
I'm not going to do it again.
Why don't you take the lead?
I promise.
I don't believe you.
I promise, double promise.
Why don't you take the lead?
Pinky promise.
Why don't you just take the lead though?
Okay. What am I saying? Hello, so you've been...
Try again.
So you've been listening to Ross and Miko, Happily Ever After.
How drunk are you on a scale of 1 to 10, Ross?
I'm happy. So you've been listening to Minzy Binzy. Now you finish. You finish it.
Okay.
I'm busy.
So you've been listening to Ross and Miko. This has been Ross.
Hello.
So you've been listening to Ross and Miko. This has been Ross.
Goodbye.
And I've been Miko.
Goodbye.
And I will continue to be so. We'll see you on the next one.
It's a dingle.
I feel strange.
It means you're a baboon. And I'm not.
I'm talking about like a big bear.
Phenomenal cosmic power.
John Goodman. Yeah.